Hi, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. And joining me today, somebody who's not hating a movie. We got a love movie from the lovely Julia Marchesi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so stoked to talk about this today. I'm very excited.
Yes, I'm very excited to have you on, especially you've got some movie podcastery of your own that I'm sure our listeners would love to get into.
Yeah. So I'm actually, I have two podcasts right now. So the one is I've been doing for several years now called Horror Movie Survival Guide. That's all about deep dives into horror movies. And it's my best friend, Terry, and I going in all sorts of directions. And we had a lesbian vampire round recently. We do Romero. We do like whatever. We love horror. And the idea is if you watch enough horror movies, you'll learn how to survive and be the final girl or boy. So this is our goal.
It's a good goal.
It is. I mean, it's survival skills. I got lots of horror movie survival tips for you. So you can tune in for that. I also do a podcast called Jodorowsky. That's all about Alejandro Jodorowsky and his films. I'm a big fan of his. And then I'm also a filmmaker. So I just finished doing a Stephen King adaptation in Maine.
Cool.
Through his Dollar Baby program, which was super, super rad.
Good deal. Love a Dollar Baby program. Stephen King really, really looking out for filmmakers, for indie filmmakers.
Yeah. And part of the contract is you have to send him the film to watch because he still wants to see what people do with his work, which I think is incredible. He doesn't have to do that, but he does.
He's a great guy.
Yeah. Love that guy.
Well, excellent. Well, people, you guys should definitely go check out Julia's work. Where's the best place they can find that?
So they can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Julia C. Marchesi, and I'll have links to all that stuff there on my page.
Great. Go check out stuff, and obviously it'll be linked in the bio below as well, wherever you're listening. But let's talk about a movie that you love that a lot of people do not love, and that is 1980s musical fantasy film Xanadu.
I brought my VHS out.
Oh my God.
I know when you're listening, you can't see it, but I swear I'm holding it in my hand.
You got to go to the YouTube to check this one out. It's right there, ready to go. That is fantastic. That, wow. I'd never seen this movie until you brought it up. The movie is the inspiration for the Golden Raspberry Awards. It has been turned into a satirical musical in recent years. It's got Olivia Newton-John, Gene Kelly, Michael Beck, who had just been in The Warriors, and it has also been known as a stupendously bad film whose only salvage is the music, a mushy and limp musical fantasy, and it currently has a rotten rating of 29% Rotten Tomatoes, and yet.
Harsh, guys, yes. Harsh.
Yeah, it's a little harsh, and, you know, I am just now getting into this movie for the first time, but tell me about how you found Xanadu and how you came to love Xanadu.
So I saw for the first time at the New Beverly Cinema on a double bill with The Apple, which is another insane musical from 1980. There's this trifecta. It's like Xanadu, Can't Stop the Music, which is the Village People musical, and then The Apple. And they're all like, The Apple's 10 times as crazy as this film. And I just loved them both. And I think musicals are my favorite genre of film besides horror. So like,
interesting.
Horror musicals, even better. I mean, you mash those two things together and you
go, I love zombie prom.
And you go, yeah.
Yeah. When I was in high school, that was the first musical I ever did. My freshman year was Zombie Prom. Great. Classic musical.
Zombie Prom. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, it should have been. I don't know how it has not been turned into a movie. I'm sure that it would probably fit really well into any studio's repertoire. You could go anywhere from Troma to Universal with that thing.
I'd like to see Tromas, to be honest. I mean, that's That's my thing. So, you know, and I'm also I love classic film as well. And so I've always been a big Gene Kelly fan and seen, you know, his works when I was growing up and loved him so much. So to see him back at it and, you know, dancing and still has the same Gene Kelly charm as he always did. And because I was kind of a Gene Kelly fan, I knew, like, I got that this movie is just really taking two of his 40s movies and smushing them together. You mm-hmm. have 1947's Down to Earth, where you have Rita Hayworth actually coming down as Terpsichore to help a failing musical. And you're like, okay, well, there's that. And then you also have 1944's Cover Girl, where also stars Rita Hayworth. And this is the crazy part, because this is Gene Kelly's playing the same character as he's playing in 1944's Cover Girl. So he is playing Danny McGuire, same character. They talk about his club he used to have, which is the club he has in Cover Girl. And that plot of that movie is basically kind of the same as this one. It's like a guy who falls in love with a girl who looks like someone he fell in love with 40 years ago. And now he's going to, you know, they're going to all go through this together. So I rewatched those again to refresh myself on those. The craziest thing I didn't remember about this is that they mention very flippantly in Cover Girl that Danny McGuire got shot down in Libya during World War II. And I was like, whoa.
Oh, man.
That like a whole new dimension to his character now. Okay.
I love that that character has lasted so long over the course of, they brought him back for this. This is clearly like, I'm not a person who has seen a lot of classic musicals. I think the most I'd seen was in film school, and we'd watched some like Busby Berkeley stuff.
Right.
And to like watch this movie for the very first time and not really understanding that that was the reference that they were trying to do, where they were really trying to like bring that style of film and musical into the '80s. I still found myself like captivated by a lot of it. I think that obviously the music was really great. I loved the soundtrack. I love, I mean, how can you not love Olivia Newton-John too? She's so fantastic in this.
Yeah. And I don't think any review ever said anything bad about her. Like, it's not her fault, right? Like, everyone's like, no, she does a good job. Gene Kelly does a good job. It's just,
yeah, it really is just like, it's hard to pin down watching it now why people don't like it or why people didn't like it then. Because I feel like it's the kind of movie that, you know, obviously if you know what you're getting into when you're watching it, if you know you're watching something that is pretty, as far as I can, the way I saw it was like pretty plotless. It's like the most paper thin plot possible in order to just service these crazy musical numbers. And you know, I mean, truly crazy musical numbers where you have even like a moment where they are turned into animated characters.
I mean, this is the other thing about this movie. It has a Don Bluth animated sequence that comes out of the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
The first time I watched it with my best friend, Marion, she fell off the couch. She laughed so hard because she just was struck in the face. She didn't expect it at all. It came out of nowhere. I love Don Bluth. I think this is an amazing animated sequence. I think something that people overlook about this movie, and it seems like a very basic thing, but when you really think about it, like, this movie has no violence in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many movies can you say, even like joking violence, like this has none of it. And like, that's very unusual. I don't know if people don't like that. why it seems like there's not conflict is because there's no violence. I'm not really sure.
Maybe. Cause yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't really seem the only part that is anywhere close to conflict, really, or violence, I guess, is the argument, is when our hero is arguing with his boss at the record company and just has the same argument with him, but flips it later on in the movie.
Yeah.
That's the closest we get. Otherwise, it is a very just like fun. We're here to sing and dance and watch some people dance around and have some cool colors and bright sequences and live out people's dreams.
Yeah, it's about finding your dreams, man, on roller skates. Who doesn't like that?
Yeah, roller skates out of nowhere. By the way, this movie really like it's it was described on the place where I streamed it as a person, you know, meets a muse and decides to build a roller rink. But they really don't talk about it being a roller rink at all. The roller skates do just show up out of nowhere in this movie.
I haven't been to enough nightclubs/roller rinks is the problem. I mean, where are those?
Where are those? I don't know. I was sad because I grew up in a small town in Texas where one of the main attractions was the roller rink, and now the roller rink, they just announced that it's closing down. We don't have Skate Town anymore, and it's such a shame.
No, Skate Town.
We could have had Xanadu night at Skate Town.
Yeah. We had, in Las Vegas, that's where I'm from, we had Crystal Palace. The skate of the art was their tagline.
The skate of the art. That's a great tagline.
It's pretty good.
So you have now seen this movie, you know, upwards of 20 times.
Definitely.
How did you come to really become, I don't want to say obsessed unless you want to say obsessed, but you really love this movie.
It's just pleasant, right? It's just pleasant. Like, it's just a kind of, it feels very comforting. It feels like I can watch these, you know, this beautiful film, and the music's fantastic, and I love the dance numbers. Once I discovered it, you know, my shtick is like, if I find a movie that I really love, then I kind of show it to everybody, because for me, watching people watch movies I love is a joy. So I showed this at every party and had people come over. And it's like, if you're Julia Marchesi's friend within the first 6 months, I'll probably show you Xanadu. Like, if you haven't seen it, that's probably coming out. So it's something that I think that most people enjoy it. Like, I haven't met anybody who's been like vehemently against it. The most you get is people, I'm like, meh, you know, like you get a little bit of a meh. I don't see the meh. I see it as being very fun. I like it very much, but this is kind of my aesthetic anyway. Like, you know, you got cool, groovy people on roller skates and they're doing these crazy costume dance numbers and I'm on board.
Yeah. I mean, there's the thing that I found myself not liking the most, and really this is the only part that I found as confused. Well, there's two things that I found were confusing, which is, and the only reason I know this is because I read on Wikipedia about the musical version, which explains this as a plot point.
Okay.
We don't know why at first the muses pop off this mural. I didn't know when the sequence happens at first, it's just something that happens. You just see you see them all get hit by the light and they all pop off and they have this crazy dance number. And then all of a sudden Olivia Newton-John is skating down by the beach and she kisses Michael Beck and they're off to the races. Right. In the musical version, they explain why they have this affinity for each other. It's because he painted the mural.
Right.
And I wish that was something that was originally in the movie and it was cut. I feel like I would have had just at least a little bit more of a connection story-wise.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess I feel like because musicals often are just, you have to throw logic out the window in musicals because it never will make sense. And you're just like, oh, they're coming off the wall now. And you're like, okay. And you just go with it because that's the crazy stuff happens in musicals. So I think that's kind of what's the fun of it is it's not, you know, there's a part where they're, you know, when they're going in the studio where they're doing all the special effects and they're having their like meet cute number, like they fly in that number. And I'm like, interesting. They're flying now. Okay. And you just kind of go with it because this is a musical. And
right. Yeah. Like the studio sequence where they are, there's no way that any of that stuff is going to exist at like a record company. Why would they have a studio that has some sort of a magical summoning machine? Or they
for inspiration, man. It's for inspiration.
Teleport and fly. But it's fun. You get swept up in it.
Yeah.
I think that because it's a musical, it is able to get away with stuff from like a characterization standpoint that other movies can't do. Like one of the notes that I have here that I recognize is a bad note because this is clearly something that you do in musicals is the sarcastic glasses guy who works at the studio with everybody. I hated him as a character, but then I was like, oh, I hate him. He's shitting on Sonny Malone's dreams. So why not hate him?
Right. Yeah, you're right. And I hate that guy too, but I think he's supposed to be the annoying guy that you don't like. So I was like, well, done your job, actor. I don't hate you. You did your job well.
Yes.
Just don't like the character.
And this is where we get to the other part that confused me, which is casting Michael Beck as the lead here.
Okay. So this is the problem I have with this movie because Michael Beck in The Warriors, chef's kiss. He's beautiful as Swan. I think he's great. In this, why would you cast a man who cannot sing or dance in your musical alongside Gene Kelly and Olivia Newton-John? I don't understand. He literally does neither one this entire film. And he can barely muster a smile. Like he doesn't have any of the joie de vivre you need for a musical. Yes. So I really racked my brains to come out with who I think alternate universe casting could be.
Yes, I would love to know who you think would be better than Michael Beck. Because there's a lot of options, but
yes. So, because I know that actually considered for the role, you can. And these are not my choices. John Travolta, right? Just off of Grease, totally makes sense. Would work. Andy Gibb. I was like, there you go. Right?
That'd be great.
I got no problem with Andy Gibb. Can he dance? I'm not really sure, but that's cool. Yeah. Peter Frampton also apparently was considered. Again, I'm like, Sergeant Pepper, okay, but right. I'll buy it. Yeah. Okay, but I've decided, speaking of Skate Town, fresh off of Skate Town USA, Patrick Swayze would have killed this.
Patrick Swayze would have.
The sincerity of the Swayze. Can you imagine? You would buy so that good. Torturer.
I would. I would love to see Patrick Swayze given a real, like, sad pout on roller skates.
Yeah, he would do it. I mean, he's incredible. And like, I think that if we could go back in time, Patrick Swayze as Sonny Malone, this movie would be a hit. That's my guess. Also, apologies to the cinematographer who I know is very famous and done a lot of very famous movies, but perhaps not the best cinematographer for a musical. I think that's also part of the problem.
Yes, that is something that was picked up on by Roger Ebert specifically, who says, and this is a weird criticism. I think that the cinematography criticism is correct compared to the choreography, which is what Ebert hates in his review. He says the dance numbers don't seem to have been conceived for film, which is not the fault of the choreography team. It's the fault of the camera team.
Yes, exactly. So I think like it does seem a little cut and dry for a musical as far as cinematography, because, you know, like Busby Berkeley, like you mentioned, right? You have doing this dynamic camera work, and yes, they're dancing and the dancing is beautiful, but it's also the camera's part of that. And this feels so kind of removed from all the dancing. It does feel very stagey. Mm-hmm. So I think if you had something that had a little bit more life in it, then I think that it would definitely make a different film as well.
Yeah. I mean, I can't help but also think, because this is, when you look at the only person out of the Razzie Awards that this was nominated for. It was nominated for six. It was nominated for seven. It won one out of those seven. Robert Greenwald won for worst director. Where does he fall in terms of, is he somebody who you think should fall on the sword for how this movie is perceived or no?
It's hard to say, like, you know, where does the blame go? Because obviously, like, Michael Beck is the fall guy, right? Immediately, you're like, oh, it's his fault. But you're like, and but yeah. Is it though? Is it really? I mean, yes, it is kind of his fault. I'm sorry, but it's true.
It definitely, when you watch him and he gets worse as the movie goes on, scene by scene.
And like, Gene Kelly is so natural on screen and so fluid and so fun. And so he just looks like this, like, block of wood standing next to him, but kind of not, I don't understand. The writing, you know, you could say let's fault the writers, right? You have Mark Reed Rebell and Richard Christian and Dennis, who is this, you know, they're obviously, I think part of the, okay, I don't think the writing is the problem, because I think the writing was taking into the assumption that someone like me would be watching this movie, right? Mm-hmm. Someone like me who's like, oh, this is Down to Earth meets Cover Girl, and that's why Gene Kelly's in it, and this is what they're doing. They're expecting people, it's like, if you have that backstory, you're like, this movie's rocks, this movie's amazing.
Right.
If you don't have that backstory, it's like, she's a muse, what is happening? I don't know what's going on. So mm-hmm. I think maybe they were writing for an older audience or that weren't seeing musicals in the 1980s. I'm just spitballing here. But these are ideas I have.
I think, yeah, if there's... I've never seen any trailers or marketing for this, but who do you think that this was marketed for? Because it seems like that's a big problem in how this is perceived too. Like, I don't know who this is for at the time.
Okay, so here's the thing. Okay, perhaps this movie was, as I said, written for the older crowd who would remember these musicals, but it was marketed for the younger crowd, because I read in prepping for this, Marvel's Super Special number 17, which is dedicated exclusively to Xanadu.
Oh yeah, that's right.
A whole magazine. I read that whole thing, all about the making of, and they're, you know, doing this. And when they pitch it, it really does sound fantastical, right? They're like, it's modern nostalgia. You have these beautiful, fantastical costumes, you know, all of these classic, you know, actors that you love, and Olivia Newton-John, so hot. It's 1980. She just came off Grease. Like, it's the whole big thing. Mm-hmm. So you're really like doing it for like the Dynamite crowd in 1980. And I don't know if that was, but they are trying to smush them together. Right. And you literally have the scene of them smushing 1940s music and 1980s yes. music together, which I think is fabulous.
I do too. I loved the way that panned out. And I was digging where it was going. And then when you finally literally have the worlds merge, it's so fantastic to watch. It's just a lot of fun. Like, I can't imagine people watching this movie and not having fun. It feels like as soon as the way critics looked at this, as soon as somebody didn't in like think there was a plot happening that was worth commenting on, or maybe they the first time they realized that that the lead was miscast, they immediately thought, well, we're just going to drive the rest of this thing into the ground. There's no reason for us to pay attention to this.
But I think if you're a cynic going to a musical, you're in the wrong movie, because that's musicals are not made for cynics. They're made for dreamers. They're made for fantasy. That's what it is. And so if you're looking at this as a hard, like, I just watched Dog Day Afternoon and now I'm watching Xanadu, like, it's not going to work, right?
Of course not. Yeah. You can't go into this after watching, oh God, you can't watch Raging Bull and then go see Xanadu. That's not going to work.
No, it's not going to stand up well. But at least you have a little animated sequence to, like, you know, everybody likes that bit.
By the way, if there is anyone listening who does hate musicals, I encourage you to throw your preconceived notions out the window and watch Xanadu just to see what it's like. You know, this is probably, as far as musicals go, one of the easiest ones to understand with, you know, I grew up in, you know, acting and doing stuff in high school musicals and stuff. I was in, we had in my high school, like I said, we already had Zombie Prom, right? But we had some stuff that was a little weightier. We did Oklahoma, and I love Oklahoma. It's got a super a solid level of drama to it. Mm-hmm. But as far as musicals go, you know, still pretty light and breezy, just like any other musical. This, if you're looking for super light and breezy, you've never really seen a musical before, you think they're not for you, Xanadu might prove you wrong.
And if you're a kid, if you're a parent who has a kid that you're trying to also get into musicals, again, no violence in this movie. This is totally like, what is it rated on my VHS? It's PG. Interesting. I wonder what the PG's for.
Probably because you see, maybe you see a little bit too much leg on Olivia Newton-John for it to be fully.
Some of the, she looks good in every single outfit, even the like crazy space princess outfit. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you still look pretty good, Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah. This is Olivia Newton-John in this movie has officially topped my she has surpassed Faye Dunaway as one of the best looking women in the film as a whole completely. Whoa. She can't lose in this.
No. I mean, there's a reason they cast her as a muse, right? You're like, well, yeah, no guy's going to say no to that.
Of course not.
But I think it's neat, too, that she's not only reviving Sonny Malone, she's also reviving Danny McGuire at the same time. That, like, mm-hmm. he was down in this funk missing her for all these years, and now she's back to buoy him up to his next project. I think that's neat. That's like, it's kind of a love story about her and the two men at the same time.
Yeah.
And not in a creepy way.
Yeah, it's about, because it's not necessarily about the love, not like a love story in the traditional sense, for at least for her and Danny. It is about the stoking the fire of your dreams again. And mm-hmm. that's, you can't hate that. Like, I remember every time, the other thing that I was like wary of watching this movie was every time a musical number would start, I would worry, because of how stylized a lot of these musical numbers are, I was worried that they would, there would be something in them that wouldn't completely follow through. And the thing that most worried me, that I'm so glad it panned out, was the musical number at Danny's house when he's playing this old record, and then you see the faded in version of the bandstand, and then everything clears out, and Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly have this great song and dance number, and it's fantastic. But I was so worried at first, like, oh, this is going to be weird and kind of hokey, and then it becomes not that. It's become so joyous and fun.
And I think that's what Gene Kelly brings to his movies, is this sincerity that, like, he's never taking it as a joke. He's always taking it very seriously. Mm-hmm. And he still, you know, he's I don't know how old he is in this movie. I would guess 80 something. And he's dancing like he's 20 something. Like, it's just still so fluid and beautiful. And I can imagine, as Olivia Newton-John, how nervous you would be, like, oh, just dance one of the greatest dances on film of all time. No problem. But she holds her own.
Yeah, it looks like he was in his, let's see, he died in 96, he was 83, so he would have been late 60s.
All right, sorry, apologies to Gene Kelly then.
It's all good. I guess he was in his 70s initially, so.
Yeah, but he's still so handsome, and like, I fall for that smile every time, it kills me. He's so.
How can you not?
Yes, how can you not? And then really this movie like got me, you know, before the movie even started, really, because they begin with the old school Universal logo. So they're like already before you even get into the movie, like, oh, okay. And they're like just tugging on those nostalgia strings already.
Mm-hmm. So there's a quote here, the final quote that I would like to hear your rebuttal against. This is from Janet Maslin, who says that this is like The Wiz in that it is desperately stylish and doesn't have any real style. Uh-huh. Yeah. What do you have to say to that?
I see the point. I definitely have seen better styled musicals, but I think that they really tried something different, and this is not really aesthetic you see in any other film. I think that kind of like glowing effect that they have. I mean, the song that she has when she goes up to Zeus, where she's in that crazy like Tron field, like that song's kind of boring, but the effect's really good, right? And, you know, and it's like they're really trying. And then, you know, that club at the end is insane, and like that whole sequence is beautiful. So I think there is style there. I think it's just not a style that person liked very much.
That's fair.
And I feel like there are, I mean, and if you are comparing it to like a classic musical, if you something like Berkeley, like you see those sets they built and you're like, okay, well, if you're comparing it to something like that took weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks to build, and there's like every single set and all these thousands of, you know, there's, it's not on like an old school Hollywood musical scale where you would have like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of extras for everything.
Right.
Like it scaled down, but it's, I think it's still a beautiful film. I think it does look beautiful.
Yeah, I think it looks beautiful. I do wish that they had some Busby Berkeley-esque cinematography in there with some bigger sweeping camera movements. You can really see the scope of what we're dealing with on screen.
Agreed. Because I think that the mashing of the two eras number, I think from above would have looked very different, because you had those two bandstands, and when they cross over, like seeing them cross over from above would look really beautiful. But from the front, you're just like, oh, there's just people walking in front of each other. I can't really see very well.
So, yeah, like it's a real issue for me that the most dynamic the camera gets is every once in a while when you see people on roller skates will track behind while they're skating towards the camera, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, you know, that's the interesting thing about a film is like when you break it down, when something where people say these things don't work, like what specifically is not working? Because as a whole, it's not a bad. So when I think of movies that have 29% on Rotten Tomatoes, I have seen movies that deserve that, and I don't feel like this is one of them. Like this is a well-made film with great music, with incredible. You know, the performances are great. Like there's, so you can't say it's badly made, but there's just something that's not quite right. And so trying to pin down specifically what that is very hard.
Yeah, I think for a lot of reasons, and probably the most obvious one being that critics at the time were perhaps willing to be extremely cynical and not just cut loose.
Yes. Is there somebody else that you would have liked to have seen in Michael Beck's role?
God, I mean, you pit Patrick Swayze, and now he's the only person who I would want to see in Michael Beck's role. He would be so good in this. Yes. Oh, man.
You know he can sing. She's Like the Wind. We've heard him sing.
Yeah.
You know he can dance.
I know. Oh, God.
You can see like a Gene Kelly Patrick Swayze dance number.
That would be great. I'm picturing that in my head now, and I wish that we could make that happen. But hey,
I'll time travel. I'll make it happen.
Please do.
Okay.
Get back there and find out how to make this happen. This would have been fantastic. Are there other things? So obviously there's other musicals in this sort of era that you mentioned. It Can't Stop the Music, the Village People musical. I'd never even seen or heard of it until I was reading up about this movie on Wikipedia. Is that worth watching the way that Xanadu is, you think?
Well, it's not as good as Xanadu. I will. They are really trying on that one, and it's not very good. Steve Guttenberg, if you want to see him in shorty shorts roller skating, you get to see that a lot. There's quite a YMCA number, if you know what I mean. It's something that I'm like, 29% maybe deserves. Maybe it deserves it. I'm sorry if you can't stop the music. I love it for like that one's like so bad it's bad kind of thing. But then The Apple is all, you know, so this, if you wanted to watch this trifecta of movies came out tonight in 1980 to blow your mind, The Apple just takes Xanadu and like the end sequence of Xanadu, if you would like imagine like that frenetic energy through the entire movie, that would be the apple. And it's also kind of a biblical allegory, but it's set in the future of 1994. It's really
George special. Clinton did the music for the apple. Apparently, that's what Wikipedia says.
It's quite a film, and it's. Wow. I really like it. And that's one that's like, I feel like I have to show people Xanadu first to kind of gauge their interest in this kind of market. And if they seem palatable to this, then I'm like, okay, let's ratchet it up a notch. Then we go to the apple, and that's a whole different ball of wax because that movie's bananas.
I'm going to have to check this out. Nigel Lithgow was the choreographer for the apple too. Wow, this thing goes, this rolls deep. Yeah, I'm going to have to check
it out. It's Canadian. Really something. So this is like, it's like, you know, Xander is a little more kid friendly. I'll say that the apple takes it to a more adult direction. Okay. There might be a sex musical number. I don't want to spoil anything, but I'm just saying. Oh,
all right. Well, good to know. I'll file that one away for later on. I mean, yeah, I'm with you on this. I think I still like, I couldn't even put a star rating on Xanadu. I feel like I just enjoyed watching it. I had a good time. Even the part of me that was like, oh, I'm sitting here trying to think about plays to pick apart this movie so that way we can have a tete-a-tete as we're doing this podcast. And I'm just like, there's not really anything. It's just silly and fun. And I can't be a cynic for this one. I can't fall into the old Roger Ebert trap. I just gotta appreciate what it is.
That makes me so happy to hear. And I do recommend highly going back to watch the two movies I mentioned that this is based on, because Gene Kelly, his last film, but those are, you know, his dancing and his singing in those movies are incredible. And Rita Hayworth's my favorite classic movie star as well. To see them paired up is delightful. But I think a lot of people think classic musicals don't have a lot to offer, or they aren't very dramatic, or they aren't interesting. But I would challenge you to, you know, and especially in a musical, you're getting a lot of leg as well. If that's something that you're interested in, 1940s leg. I mean, who doesn't like that?
Yeah, we're 1980s leg. If you want to see some Olivia Newton-John thigh, then this is the movie.
We got
for
plenty
you.
Of that in this movie.
Oh yeah. Well, Julia, I am with you on the show people Xanadu train. I think, this might be one that I'm going to have to, I'm keeping it in my Plex server. People should watch it. And thank you for bringing this into my life. I feel like now that I didn't even think about how joyful the shirt I'm wearing is, but this really is how I feel after watching Xanadu.
Oh, heart radiating from chest. This is what I aim for in life. If I can show you a movie that makes your heart radiate from your chest, I have done my job as a human.
Thank you, Julia, for bringing this to me. One more time, where can the listeners find you on social media?
You can find me at Julia C. Marchesi on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm very active. I'd love to say hello if you want to talk to me about Xanadu, The Apple, Can't Stop the Music, Down to Earth, Cover Girl. I'm there.
Wonderful. You can find me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram, jlightcomedy.com for show dates, both live and live streamed. If you like the podcast, please consider subscribing on Patreon. You get access to bonus episodes and to my Plex film server. And if you can't afford it, tell a friend and leave a review. That's good enough for me too. Julia, thanks again.
You're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
This has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.